Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way we experience life and spirituality. My guest on today's show is Susan Dugan, A Course in Miracles teacher and the author of multiple articles and books based on forgiveness and living A Course in Miracles. And today, Susan has suggested that we talk about ACIM Workbook Lesson 160. I am at home. Fear is the stranger here. So if you have your Course in Miracles, you might go ahead and pull out the workbook, and you can read along with us as we're looking at some of the sections of this particular lesson. I would also invite you to join us over in our private group on Facebook. If you go to 12radio.com, that's our website, look on the left side of the page, and when you click chat, it will automatically redirect you to Facebook, which you don't need to be there during the show. But if you want to interact, if you want to make a comment, ask a question, you're welcome to do that. Now, we don't interrupt the show to actually answer questions usually, but I do try to respond to questions or comments in the chat room directly. And sometimes not during the show, but I will do it afterwards. So if you'd like to participate with us doing that, please come on over. And our producer today is Scott Weaver, and he'll be at the door and he'll let you in. Now, in some ways, I want to say Susan doesn't need any kind of introduction because she's been on the show a lot. In fact, I was looking through some of my files and I thought it really has been years since we have been doing some shows together, which in some ways just seems amazing. But I know that many of you may be tuning in for the first time, so I will tell you, Susan Dugan is an avid student of A Course in Miracles, and she also does a lot of writing. She sometimes interviews people and puts those interviews up on her blog. She also writes fiction, but she has written three books specifically addressing her particular journey with forgiveness specifically, but her journey with A Course in Miracles. Now, her three books are Extraordinary Ordinary Forgiveness, Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want, and Forgiveness, the Key to Happiness. And I really do highly recommend those books because they're essays, really. The format is like essays. They're small chapters. And they really are just straight from her heart, talking about her experience working with A Course in Miracles. And I always tell her, maybe it's kind of rude, but I always think they're hilarious. I love the way she writes, and maybe it's just because I resonate to some of it. Sometimes we are so silly, you know, especially in terms of A Course in Miracles, thinking that we know better than anybody else in terms of our spirituality or how we're going to run our lives. And so Susan just talks about that whole process of turning away from Jesus, turning away from God, and thinking that she knows better. So she's very, very candid in her expression and sharing with us what those, what some of those incidences are in her book. So I do highly recommend those three books. You can Google her name and find those three books on Amazon.com. And maybe there might even be links to it on her particular website, which is www.forayesinforgiveness.com. And forays is F-O-R-A-Y-S. So forayesinforgiveness.com. That is her blog / website. So look for something there. So I'd like to welcome Susan onto the show where we are going to talk about Workbook Lesson 160. I am at home. Fear is the stranger here. Well, welcome, Susan. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you for the suggestion of Lesson 160, I Am at Home, Fear is the Stranger Here. So do you have anything that you want to say to that? I mean, how did this lesson come to you, or you know, why did you suggest it?
You know, it just really, the title of it was appealing to me. I think I've just noticed in myself how much over the last few weeks I've been struggling at times with fear, as I think, you know, many of us are. Well, the uncertainty of what's happening with this virus, all the uncertainty of what the confusing information at times about how to deal with it, the ever fluctuating kind of state of what what we should be doing or not doing. And so I just really have it's been a great classroom to see how identified I am as a personal self and a body, and how real fear can can still seem and feel to me a lot of the time, you know. And so, and at the same time, I've had some really nice shifts to where I, when I am finally willing and I can't kind of take it anymore, and I'm finally willing to ask for help and to open to the part of us that is, you know, that really knows that its home is not here, then I do have, you know, I can have quite a different experience, even though nothing has really changed in my daily reality, which, you know, does feel like the longest Groundhog Day movie ever.
Really? Really?
But, so I just, you know, I just really see that when we let go of our resistance to trying to control an environment that clearly we can't control and really have never been able to control very much, but we're confronted, you know, these days with the with COVID-19, with the reality of how little control we really have over the dream, you know, this dream of me as a personal self, as a body. You know, kind of adrift in a world of bodies where random things happen all the time, and you know, where we feel so vulnerable much of the time because we can't really control, or it seems as if we can't control what's happening to us, and it seems as if that is the source of why we feel so vulnerable and fearful. You know, I think that this has given us a great opportunity. And given me a great opportunity to really practice forgiveness, practice what the Course is saying about making our lives a classroom of forgiveness, you know, asking to really consider, to step back and really consider that, you know, am I really fearful? Am I really anxious because of all of these external circumstances? Or is there something else going on here? Could I see something different? Is there another part of me that is not fearful, that sees it differently, that experiences this differently? And as we know from being Course students, the answer is yes, there is another part of you. There is a part of your mind that you're actively denying right now, that you've forgotten, that knows that our safety could never lie in this dream, which was, you know, the stream of exile from God, the stream of believing in the separation from God really happened, and that now we exist as these personal autonomous selves, but and we don't remember where we came from, but it's not our fault. Here we are in the world. We didn't ask to be here, and you know, none of our needs ever really get met, and we're kind of under constant attack from our perspective, you know. So there is a part of our mind that knows that our home lies elsewhere and can really provide 24/7 comfort to us because, you know, it's aware that this is not our home, this dream, that this is a dream, that's so it's not real, of what, you know, what it would be like to be on our own, to be other than God, to be a individual that, you know, that really did run away from home and has, you know, really does deserve, punishment for it. And is now adrift again in this world that seems to be punishing, you know, all the time. Hmm. And so anyway, that was my motivation for choosing this lesson, and I think just choosing this topic of fear, which is, you know, the fear that is really the true fear that we're experiencing has nothing to do with anything in the dream, but is really just coming from that fear of retaliation over the guilt that we feel in our mind from believing something that didn't happen, which is that we separated from God. And so, you know, the fear is what kind of keeps the idea of me going in any moment, the idea of the world going. But we do have the opportunity to step vertically up outside that dream, back to the mind, and with a different part of our mind, which the Course calls Jesus, Holy Spirit, at our side, you know, with us, we can actually have a different experience in which we see that we're still safe, that we're still loved, that we're still loving, and that this is not our home.
Well, and I was thinking that there's so many places in the Course where we are reminded of what a burden it is to carry this weight of believing that we are this person, or believing that this is our home, believing that this is our truth. Right. You know, there's one with a, you know, you're carrying a sword and you've got the sword over your head and you're ready to, you know, off with their heads kind of thing, and how heavy that judgment is. And as I knew that we were going to do this, I pulled up Ken Wapnick's, you know, the workbook, The Journey Through the Lessons. And I will admit I didn't get all the way through because, of course, I start right in the beginning and get stuck on stuff. But the one thing that kind of resonated with me, he talks about in the very beginning, he's talking about sin as an adjustment. Right. And he refers to something in the text that's in chapter 20 that starts out with, seek not to make the Son of God adjust to his insanity. Right. And that's what kind of got me stopped right there, because I said, ah, if that isn't the truth, you know, and it was almost like in that moment I said, we almost have to be like gymnasts. We have to be contortionists to keep like bending ourselves and adjusting ourselves. You know, it's so much harder actually to believe that this is true than to accept the truth. You know, going back to that idea of simplicity versus complexity. Why do we choose a really hard road? Why do we choose the complex? You know, that it, like I said, the minute I read that of Ken's, I went, yeah, I feel like a contortionist. That's exactly what it feels like. Like I'm having to bend and move and, you know, the burden, the heaviness, the whole energy, the effort of having to keep this illusion real for myself.
Right.
I could all of a sudden just feel that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it takes enormous energy to keep the stream going.
Yeah.
It's very cruel. It's very confusing. It's very, you know, it doesn't, nothing really adds up here. We've forgotten why we made it up, so we don't even know the underlying, you know, what the Course is telling us is that there is a reason that we're doing this, which, you know, it's because we believe that we really separated from God, and we took that thought seriously as if that could really happen. And then we decided that we, you know, that we deserve punishment. And then we projected that idea out and followed it out into a world of punishment. Mm-hmm. And but then we forgot we made it up, and now we're just, okay, here I am in a world of punishment. How did this happen? And then we're trying to make the best of a really bad situation, right? And also try to somehow get our needs met, and we feel like a stranger, as this lesson says, all the time. You know, how did I get here? Mm-hmm. Why is this my home? Like, why doesn't this add up? And we don't even trust ourselves or each other enough to even raise those questions.
Uh-huh. And you know what I find? I'm watching way too much TV. And,
aren't we all?
And mostly the news. I mean, or whatever you want to call it.
Not me. I'm watching way too much Netflix.
I'm watching way too much news. In fact, you know what I found, which I find kind of interesting, because I love movies, and sometimes I can get into them, but I'll put on a movie or try to watch something, and I get totally distracted.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And it's attention spans. Yeah, I just can't go there. And I'm almost compulsively like, I want to know how many cases there are, or I want to know what they're saying about this, or I want to know what they're saying about that.
And
part of it is, like you say, Groundhog Day. It's a new day, but just worse statistics. But I find myself in the middle of a movie just wanting to turn it off because I can't just stick with it. But here's where I'm going with it also, is that part of me is going, why do you keep listening to this stuff? Because the job of a lot of these commentators is to continually say, well, why do you think he'd do that? Why do you think they'd do that? Why do you think this is? And I start screaming at the TV, because ideas leave not their source. You know, and it's sort of like, quit asking why. You know, there is no answer to this other than we made this up. It's never going to be logical. It's never going to be reasonable. It's not ever going to make sense. And so then, of course, I'm going, okay, CA, I think it's time to turn the TV off.
Right. But you know, we keep compulsively tuning in though, right?
Yes.
And we have to really begin to see that we're attracted to this, you know, this lesson, in paragraph 3, and we'll probably read through a couple, the other paragraphs first, but really speaks to that. It's like, why are you, you know, what is the reason that you keep doing this, you know? And the reason is because it you know, if fear is real, then I'm real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we want to believe that, however uncomfortable, and that's probably a very mild adjective at this point.
Right.
this dream is, however horrific, it nonetheless, you know, means that we really are, but we really do exist outside of God, at God's expense. But it's somehow not our fault. And just like it's not our fault that this virus is after us.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and it's not our fault that our you know, the people that we thought were in charge don't know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And can't help us, and nobody can help us, and nobody has an answer, and there's no vaccine, and there's no treatment, and the death toll climbs every day, you know, and all of the news networks lead with the death toll, right? The body count.
Yep.
Right. And that's, and you know, I mean, really, it's, of course, consciously, nobody wants this. I mean, I'm not saying that, and the Course isn't saying that. But on some level, you know, everything here is fear-based. And even in much more tranquil times, you know, we're afraid, we're always afraid that the other shoe is going to drop.
Mm-hmm.
Because it does. You know, and with the whole history of humankind, we have all sorts of examples of how things fail us, and as well as in our own lives, you know, and eventually, even if you've had a pretty easy quote unquote life in the dream, it still fails you.
Yes.
You know? And yes. And everybody that you love eventually leaves, and you know, and the body that you thought was your home eventually dies. So yep. That, you know, that we don't think that we hardly ever really think about those things or confront them. But Jesus is always saying, you know, kind of look at the laws that you made this world on. And no wonder, you know, no wonder you're afraid here. But you made this up. You know, it's not God's will. Your true self, you know, is not exposed to any of this.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And is not vulnerable. You're choosing to dream. Why do you keep choosing to dream? And, you know, of course, the answer is that fear, you know, if fear is real, then love is not. God is not. I really did destroy love, and now I deserve to be fearful. And my only hope is to try to, you know, keep dreaming and somehow position myself as the less guilty one, relatively with whoever I'm interacting with in the dream. Again,
right.
It's not my fault. You know?
Yeah. Have you ever listened to, we're doing this, we've been doing this month on this show. We're listening to portions of Ken Wapnick's workshop that's called, I think he did it like in 1996, 1998. And it's called The Experience of A Course in Miracles.
Yes, yes.
Oh, my God. Susan, I am so loving that workshop.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing it's doing that I would say is really a new turn for me is maybe because he started out so much talking about Freud and looking at the darkness of the ego. I really have started to glimpse the idea that, I mean, I've always known I had a lot of resistance. I knew that intellectually, but I kind of kept thinking, oh, but my darkness isn't like everybody else's darkness. You know, mine's a whole lot lighter. And listening to that workshop, it has become so much more apparent to me. CA, you don't escape by continuing, you know, like what some people call the happy talk. It's like sooner or later, you got to go there. Sooner or later, you got to go into the cave.
Yes.
Or sooner or later, you've got to go with the ego, even if that's going to make you cry your eyes out. Your darkness is no less dark than anybody else's. And
right.
That's been kind of a turning point for me. I mean, I'm still very far away from it, but I think, you know, somehow listening to that particular workshop, I feel like I am finally getting at least intellectually convinced, yeah, there's no shortcut. There is no way to go around. Because I keep wanting to think, okay, I'll acknowledge the ego, but I don't need to go there. I don't need to go there. And, you know, for the many, how many hundreds of times does Jesus just say something equivalent to, take my hand and we'll look at this together?
Right.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. You know, and now I'm like, no. I mean, he's serious. He's serious about this.
Yeah. Well,
you've got to look at it.
Yeah. Well, you do have to look at it. And before you're willing to look at it, you have to experience it. I mean, you really have to, you know, this is, you know, I think, and I can't remember in what workshop or if it was even in Absence from Felicity, but, where Ken was talking about how Jesus was telling Helen that, you know, this is not about going around the mountain. This is a course right through it. It's not about going around the circle of fear, you know. Mm-hmm. It's going through the circle of fear. So it's leading you through something that you've buried in your mind that's very horrific. It's a lie, but it's horrific. And you can't, you know, get to the other side, to the light, until you go through that darkness.
Yep. And I just, like I said, I've come to the intellectual understanding that that's true. And I realize I want to go around the mountain. I do not want to go through it. And somehow keep thinking that I will find the shortcut. I will find the way around it.
Right. But of course, that's, you know, that's the ego trying to figure a way, doing the course with the ego, you know, because really we you know, there isn't a way around it, and it's giving the ego more power than it actually has when we say we're so afraid of it we can't even look at it.
Yeah.
Or we have to find a detour around it, you know.
Yeah.
Because the truth is that if we are eventually, you know, it's our terror that will eventually get us to really be willing to take Jesus's hand, and you know that all those lessons in there's a lesson in the workbook. There's a part of the course that talks about going through the darkness, and you know, really, and going through the clouds of guilt. There's several references to that in the text as well, and so you know we can't. Really see that they're just clouds and that they're just, you know, mist. They're nothing. And, you know, and they're not the wall of granite that, or the burning fires of hell that we think they are.
Right.
You know, until we actually have that experience. And that's something that we do, you know, we can do in the moment, each moment that kind of fear arises. That's why fear can be such a helpful red flag for us to use and to say, wow, you know, I really see that I think I'm a body and I'm terrified of this virus, for instance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or that, you know, I'm terrified of losing this person, or the, you know, whatever the terror, however it's presenting to us. But that can be something that really motivates us to say, you know, I don't see a way out of this.
Right.
And so I've got to have help. Yeah. I don't know what that help will look like. I can't, you know, it forces us into a humility that is a lot deeper than maybe we've been willing to, you know, grasp before. Because we've had things that scared us, but maybe not this much.
Yeah, not this collectively. You know, I mean, I feel like that's it. There have been many, many things in our lives that scare us or we don't like. But we always think we have a certain amount of control.
Yes.
And if anything, that's what this is doing, I think, that is so scary on a collective level, is that, no, there's nobody who's got control of this.
Right.
And you certainly don't have control. And maybe the only control you can exert is at least to link arms with other people and help figure it out. But I know in my personal lifetime, I have never experienced anything on this level.
Right. And I think it's a great, it really shows us that there's no hierarchy of illusions too. That's a great leveling sort of our thoughts that some people have it better than others. Nobody's safe from this.
No.
Nobody.
No. Well, and, you know, you kind of alluded to this, but it's not even just the virus, like being safe from getting it yourself. You know, we're not safe from loss. We're not safe from, you know,
financial ruin.
Yeah, financial ruin. Yeah. I think, you know, like, for instance, I heard somebody say not too long ago, well, we just got to get this country back open again because I'm lonely. And I mean, it's all I could do to not laugh because I was like, are you really suggesting that we risk lives because you feel lonely?
Right. You know? Again, that's our hierarchy of illusion because the truth is, you know, the mental health problems from this are just as valid
as significant. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's not even just the virus. We have to grieve a loss of our lifestyles. Yeah, being lonely, not being able to go out when we want, or not being able to connect in the way that we were connecting. You know, nobody is going to somehow live in some little white, you know, castle on a hill or whatever you want to call it and be untouched. Right. It just isn't going to happen. And all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, you know?
Right.
There is no Shangri-La, so to speak, on this planet where all of a sudden we can turn back the clock and make this go away.
Right. And I mean, the very reason, when you think of it that way, that we, you know, we made up this world and we wanted to strike off on our own, right? And I'm going to be an individual. The whole idea of the Tiny Mat idea was I can be a separate self. I can be autonomous. And you know, we took that even further as we projected it outward and you know, projected it into the world and said, I can also be, I'm autonomous from all these other bodies, you know, and we just keep becoming more and more fragmented and I can make my own decisions and I, it's all based on my personal self, my, you know, this idea of me. And we were willing to pay the price in mortality for that idea, you know, and the price in loneliness, because the only way that you know we can ever really be whole is as we truly are, which is an undifferentiated union with God, the capital S self that the Course refers to, you know, and so but even that now has been shattered because we're actually interdependent. We're all in the same miserable sinking boat, right?
Yeah.
And so what a great opportunity that is when the whole point of the Course is to begin to see that we're the same.
Yes.
You know, that's a starting point for us to say, you know what? Everybody here really is fighting the same hard battle. Mine is not any worse than anyone else's. And in truth, I mean, although there's slight variations, no one else's is any worse than anyone else's. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all being impacted by this in really kind of brutal ways, you know, and certainly ways that are brutal to our sense of self, you know, and our sense of autonomy and our sense of control and our sense of you know, hope.
Yes. Well, right. And I think just stripping us down, because you know how when things get really rough or tough, whatever you want to call it, we kind of lose the veneer of what I consider social grace or being nice in a sense. You know, our fears, they become more obvious.
Yes.
And, you know, kind of to the point of, did I really say that out loud? You know, just like the person who told me we need to open the company because I'm lonely. Well, you know, if she really examined that, she might go, really? Yeah, do I feel that? And one of the visuals that has been coming to me recently on this, and I think because I was reading something in the Course where they talked a lot about the fragmentation, you know, of the self, and that, you know, in a sense, we exploded this sense of oneness into all these fragments. And I kind of see all these fragments almost like one of those, you know, what did they call those disco balls, you know, that had all the mirrors on them? I see that ball just kind of shattering and all these little mirrored pieces everywhere. And every single one of them is reflecting back to me a piece of myself. And so I look at it and I go, so every time somebody says something that, and I feel like more and more people are saying things that irritate me, you know, or annoy me, or I'm just like, okay, I didn't need to know that my neighbors think this, or I didn't need to know that whatever, you know, people, that's what I mean about the veneer. I feel like people are really opening up and saying things that ordinarily they just go, hi, how are you doing? Whereas now they're saying much more truthful things. And so every time I keep going, CA, these are all mirrored pieces that are reflecting back to you.
Right.
That person isn't different. They're a fragment, and all they're doing is reflecting something back to you. And how does that make you feel?
Right.
You know, and so that has been, I mean, that's probably where some of the darkness is coming to. Like, really?
Well, really? I mean, our mind is split. So we certainly have that experience. But then, I think we also have, I've also had experiences of really being, I feel for everybody. I mean, I end up, you know, with strangers asking them how they're doing, how they and their families are doing, and having conversations that I think are more honest,
That's what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Just more to the heart. And I'm kind of talking about the dark side, but there's so many good things too.
Yeah.
Have been so many incredible, wonderful stories about what people are willing to do.
Right. When we do, you know, again, our mind is split, but we all have that. We could not really make ourselves a stranger to God, you know?
No.
And so, in a way, it's a wonderful opportunity for us to really see that, you know, everybody feels like an alien here. Everybody's scared. Everybody, you know, doesn't know how they're going to get out of this and doesn't know if they deserve to and is confused. And so we're all, in that sense, we're all in this together. And really the answer for everybody is the same. I mean, it's in the mind. It is that we are still loved and loving and safe, and this is not all we are. We're not condemned to hell. This is not punishment. We don't deserve punishment, you know. We can really join together at the level of the mind, and in doing that, we get through it, you know, in the sense that our mind can be healed. If that is really the only important healing and safety that we can turn and hope. That is you know, available to every mind, that we can awaken eventually from this dream, and that understanding that dawns on us of our sameness in this, and that we're all really not condemned, and that you know, we all deserve to awaken. We're all trying to find our way home together, and you know, that the more that we are willing to, you know, that's when we're willing to take Jesus's hand, and we have those moments of light and clarity, you know, in which the clouds disappear on the journey for a little bit, and we see that we're connected, we're safe, this is okay. Something so much greater has our back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and everyone's included in that.
Yeah. And along those lines, one of the things that, you know, there again, a line that you hear all the time but has really been coming to me recently is, there's only one person who needs to learn the Course in Miracles.
Yes.
And that's me.
Right.
You know, because I want to focus on whether or not I can convince you to do what I think is the right thing to do. You know, whether that is wear a mask or stay home or don't stay home or whatever it is.
Right.
And it's like, you know, or even if it's, I want you to study the Course in Miracles, or I want you to do this, that, or the other thing. And it's like, you know what? The only person you need to work on, the only person who has to get this is you.
Right.
Because you are the one Son of God. Now, for everybody listening, I know that that is not going to appeal to you on an intellectual level, or you're going to go, how can that possibly be? But what a relief to know that I just have to work my curriculum, whatever is right in front of me in this moment.
Right. And the Course takes the, you know, metaphysically is telling us that one, you know, my fragment of the decision-making mind is connected to every other fragment. So every time I'm willing to see that it's only my own mind, you know, to really attend to my own mind, to my part of the mind, and to make that choice for healing, you know, to see that it's only my own mind in need of healing right now, then that does automatically include that's connecting with my teacher, that's connecting with my right mind, and automatically connecting with all minds and saying,
yes,
you have the same power to make that decision too. I mean, that's just felt on some level. Maybe not consciously by everyone right now in the seeming dream, but on some level it's healing to all minds because we're not divided.
Right.
You know, all of that is an illusion. All the different ways that this seems to manifest. The one thing that you can say about everybody here that is choosing the ego is that they're terribly frightened.
Mm-hmm.
They're terribly guilty. And they're terribly, you know, they're accusing themselves of a crime that is never happened.
Right.
You know, of separating from God. And they do believe in punishment. They do believe that someone must pay. And when I'm choosing the ego, I believe the same thing.
Yeah.
I may be pointing the finger at different characters in the dream, but somebody has to pay, and it's not going to be me. I'm not as guilty as they am.
That's right.
They are.
They am. That's right. I'm not as guilty as they am.
But anyway, so, you know, so that is the beauty of this, is that, yes, if I can focus on always, you know, every call for love is my call for love, that this is only, there's only one mind in need of healing right now in this moment. If I'm upset, if I'm scared, if I'm anxious, if I'm worried, and all of those things are pretty prevalent right now in my mind, then it's my mind in need of healing. And we share the same teacher that is, you know, who can be available to all minds at once and is always available and will offer me a different experience of this if I'm just willing to let go of my, you know, my hand on the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm realizing we haven't read any of the paragraphs. Are there specific paragraphs that really speak to you about this that you want to read? And here again, we're in workbook lesson 160, which is, I am at home, fear is the stranger here.
Right. I think maybe the first three paragraphs kind of get the idea across, and then maybe we can find something at the end that's sort of hopeful. Because we're going to run out of time before we read this whole thing.
Okay, do you want to read the first paragraph?
Yeah. Fear is a stranger to the ways of love. Identify with fear and you will be a stranger to yourself, to your real self, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have identified with fear because we believe we believe that the separation is real and we feel guilty about it. And so we expect punishment. We're always fearful, you know, and we find it in the world. We project it in the world and then it seems to come back as an attack. And thus you are unknown to you. So you're a stranger to yourself when you identify with fear and thus unknown to you. What is your true self, the capital S self, remains an alien to the part of you which thinks that it is real, but different from yourself. Who could be sane in such a circumstance? Who but a madman could believe he is what he is not and judge against himself? So, and that's what we've done. We believe, you know, we believe that we are what we're not. We believe that we're bodies apart from God. And then we judge against ourselves and we condemn ourselves. We really did, you know, we really did attack God.
Yeah. We're contortionists adjusting to his insanity.
And adjusting to the insanity that we made up and, you know, completely forgetting, dissociating that we made it up.
That's right.
And now it's just, okay, how did I get here? Right?
Okay, and I'll read the second paragraph. There is a stranger in our midst who comes from an idea so foreign to the truth, he speaks a different language, looks upon a world truth does not know, and understands what truth regards as senseless. Stranger yet, he does not recognize to whom he comes, and yet maintains his home, belongs to him, while he is alien now, who is at home. And yet, how easy it would be to say, this is my home. Here I belong. and will not leave because a madman says I must. I will not make that adjustment to insanity.
Right. Yeah, I love the stranger, yet he does not recognize to whom he comes and yet maintains his home belongs to him. And the home is the, you know, my body, this world, right? This is my home. Right. But then, and yet maintains his home belongs to him while he is alien now, who is at home. And yet how easy it would be to say, this is my home. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I go into the next one? No, this is my home. Here I belong and will not leave because a madman says I must.
Right.
Well, we took it seriously and we said, okay, you know, we're out of here.
Yeah.
Right. We believed
it.
Part of our mind that took it seriously and decided that we needed to be exiles to make ourselves homeless.
Yep. Okay, you want to read the third paragraph?
What reason is there for not saying this, for not saying, you know, here I belong and will not leave because a madman, here in heaven I belong and will not leave because a madman says I must. What reason is there for not saying this? What could the reason be except that you had asked this stranger in to take your place and let you be a stranger to yourself? So, you know, the decision-making mind, I decided that I wanted to come here.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I wanted to pretend that I was a body. And, you know, I was willing to pay the price of the dream, which, you know, was that I would have to suffer here. But it would prove that I really exist apart from God, but it's not my fault. No one would let himself be dispossessed so needlessly unless he thought there were another home more suited to his tastes.
Maybe. I laugh because if that doesn't sum up the human race, you know, mm-hmm. there's always going to be grass greener over the next hill or whatever.
Yeah. This is, so let's see. I mean, you know, this is my experiment in individuality. Maybe I can make this work. Maybe I can find substitutes for the love of God. Maybe I can position myself so well compared to other people that somehow I get away with this, you know, that God doesn't punish me.
Yep. Okay, I'm going to read the next paragraph.
Yep.
Who is the stranger? Is it fear or you who are unsuited to the home which God provided for his son? Is fear his own, created in his likeness? Is it fear that love completes and is completed by? There is no home can shelter love and fear. They cannot coexist. If you are real, then fear must be an illusion. And if fear is real, then you do not exist at all.
Right. So we have those two parts of our mind that we can choose to identify with. And if we're rooting ourselves in the world, there's no way that we're not going to be fearful. There's no way out. You know, again, nothing in the world resolves that fear because it's in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
It never left the mind. You know, ideas leave not their source in the mind, the Course says, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that it can only be solved in the mind by going back to the mind and seeing it with the part of our mind that knows there was never any reason for fear because there was no guilt, there was no crime, there was no separation. And all of this is just made up. It's just a dream of what would have happened if it was real.
Yeah, and in fact, the next couple of sentences, how simply then the question is resolved. Who fears has but denied himself and said, I am the stranger here. And mm-hmm. so that kind of comes back to me, though, like we always go for the complexity.
Right.
You know, it's like we don't want the simple, logical answer.
No, complexity is of the ego, right? We want, you know, there's no complexity in God. God is. We are part of God. That's it.
Yep.
You know. But at some point we just wanted to try to see if something else would be better, which was silly because like we had everything and we do mm-hmm. have everything. We're just dreaming of exile, right?
Yeah. And instead of quickly going, oh, this is a pretty foreign place, you know, we forget.
Right.
We forget.
Right.
I mean, this whole concept in this one of who's the stranger and who's the alien.
Right.
That's an interesting concept to really contemplate, especially now.
Right. When we feel, well, the virus we think is, you know, the alien here, right?
Right, right.
That's attacking us. But we all feel, you know, there's lots of references, I think, in this theme to the Course, but the one that comes to me all the time is Lesson 182 that talks about, you know, feeling that we all feel like lost children, alien children here, and we know on some level that this is not our home.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that we lost our home on some level. There's that nagging thought, you know, why am I here? But we don't know how, we don't think we can find it again. And we just kind of bottle that up, and we all don't even ask the questions anymore. We just pretend that somehow we can make this world work.
Yes.
But then we're confronted with things quite occasionally, and we've been confronted with something for quite a while now that's so complicated and so, you know, seems out of control that we can't really deny that we can't really claim that the world is working at all.
Right. I can't claim that for sure.
So that's really tough, you know? It's like, what's okay? You know, we're scrambling to try to find something that says it's going to work. And no, nobody knows. And it's really evident when we listen to the news or we hear the latest that nobody knows, that even the people that are supposed to know don't know.
Yeah.
What do you hear more than anything else? We don't know.
We don't know. And which is such a hard thing to hear.
And yeah.
You know, it is fascinating to me because I worked in medical research for 30 years. There mm-hmm. is a part of me that at least I'm enjoying the parts that I understand.
Right.
Because, I mean, you know, there were so many parts of that life that I loved, and then there were so many parts of that life that I'm like, oh, I'm so glad I'm out of that. But,
right.
you know, that's one of the hardest things. And, I mean, it was one of the hardest things in research. And I thought about, you know, because we did do studies with the CDC, with the National Institutes of Health. You know, we did clinical trials. We did all kinds of things. We did surveillance. We did, you know, in fact, all of this contact tracing stuff. I'm like, I'd be really good at that. I could.
Mm-hmm.
I managed people that did those kinds of things. And so there is a part of me that kind of wants to jump right back into it. And it's fascinating. But the one thing I remember is, you know, you work for years. You work for years to find out that you don't know
mm-hmm.
or that it didn't prove effective. And yeah, a few people seem to get better, but not statistically. Or, you know, and then you even second guess yourself, you know, did we set the bar too high? Is it okay if one person out of 10 gets better? You know, that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I think it gives me a little bit of an edge because that's what happens in that kind of world. I mean, there's a reason they call it medical practice. You know,
right.
We're always practicing and it spills over into our lives. We want to be sure of things. But the truth is, we don't know a lot of what we think we know.
We don't
Whether
know
it's medicine or
yet.
Life or spirituality.
Right. I mean, from the Course's perspective, we don't know anything.
We don't know anything.
All of it's based on a lie.
Right.
So really the opening to the spiritual journey is that recognition that I don't know. And, you know, that Helen and Bill had with there has to be another way, a better way
yeah.
of relating to each other here. And that's what leads most of us to the Course or to any spiritual, you know, to seriously embark on a spiritual path, a particular spiritual path. But really, you know, that's the embarking is just the beginning. We have to really have that humility of arriving again and again in the moment to the awareness that we're wrong.
Yeah.
That we're wrong about where we, you know, what we think we're afraid of, what the cause of this is. That, you know, this isn't about a virus. This isn't about the constant threat levels in the world that seem to be attacking bodies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is about a belief that I have been out of touch with in the mind, and a decision that I made in the mind, and I have a different decision that I can make right now. There's a part of my mind that doesn't share in the psychosis.
Right.
And can help me. And that, you know, that becoming, that's the humility that we need to go deeper with to walk through that fear and just say, okay, Jesus, I'm going to trust that if I really look at this with you and I'm willing to walk through these dark, stormy, you know, thunder-filled clouds with you, then that somehow, you know, I will get to the other side.
Right.
And we don't, you know, that's the larger process over time that happens. We don't have to always be like in the middle of the thundercloud, But in any moment in which I'm feeling that terror, that anxiety, whatever the negative feeling is, I have that opportunity to have a moment of clarity, of light.
Right.
You know, and that teacher is always with me. And eventually the illusions start to fade the more I'm willing to do that.
Yeah. And there are so many corollaries, especially with humility or the idea, maybe I don't know, you know,
yeah.
Maybe I am clueless and I don't know. Because how often is that true that as long as we hang on to the idea, we know the answer, mm-hmm. we're not open to the answer.
Right.
You know, there's no room in our lives for the answer.
And the first step of forgiveness is it's lesson five. I'm not upset for the reason I think. And it's really the only meaningful step, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's saying I'm wrong. What I'm attributing, whatever, you know, this fear, this anxiety, this worry, this pain, you know, this loss to, I'm wrong about the cause of it. Or maybe I'm wrong is enough.
Right. Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe I'm wrong.
What if?
And step two is lesson 34, you know, I could see peace instead of this. I want to see this the way my teacher, my inner teacher, the other part of my mind that's you know, not dreaming, sees it, experience it with him.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that note, I'm looking at the clock and realizing we do need to wrap up.
Yes.
So is there anything further from this particular lesson that you want to summarize or you want to read or, you know, I'll give you the last word.
Well, I think, you know, at the simplest level that just to try to remember that when we're in a fearful state, we're, you know, that's not my real self. And I do have a part of myself that is stronger than that. And, you know, I can choose the teacher of love instead of fear, the teacher of safety and comfort instead of terror and, you know, dire predictions and destruction. So in any moment I have that with me and I'm not alone.
Yes. Yes. I'm kind of laughing at myself. We had this conversation before, but you had told me that one time when you were in Temecula taking classes in person at the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, sometimes you'd come back to your room and you'd want to, you know, either read a book or watch some movie that was just like really outrageously violent or whatever. And you and I were talking about it because I said, I find myself doing the same thing. It's like when I try to escape from my life, it's always into something kind of horrendous. And I'm like, what's that about? And so somehow I was smiling because I was thinking the one escape I am doing, like I all of a sudden have this penchant to, I have to watch the Die Hard movies.
Right.
Oh, that's and funny. I don't even know if I like the Die Hard movies, you know, with Bruce Willis. But it's like sometimes you just, you know, maybe that's even looking at that. What is that about? That, you know, is it because you want to be convinced the bad guys get killed? You know, that there is justice in the world? What is it that's drawing you to
right,
that? But,
right.
But well, I was thinking watching, just in the teachers. Which teacher do you want, Sierra?
Right, it is, yeah. Well, I just on that same note, though, I've been watching, I'm laughing because I've been watching, I watched the third season of Ozark. I don't know if you're familiar with that on Netflix. It's a wonderful series. I mean, it's just so well done. But it's awful. It's, you know, and now I'm watching it again from the beginning. And, but, you know, it's a story about a family hopelessly caught up, you know, who made some really bad decisions and is hopelessly caught up in this web with a drug cartel. And, you know, it's very violent. It's very, but, you know, they live on a lake and they sit down to dinner with each other. In some ways, they're like a very normal family, you know, and I'm thinking only in the middle of a pandemic could something like that sort of feel like the Waltons or something. You
right,
know?
Right.
I'm like so soothed by it somehow.
Oh my gosh, that is so funny, Susan. Oh my gosh. Well, on that note, I guess we do need to wrap it up. But I just want to say thank you so much for being here. And if you want to find Susan, you can find her on her blog, her website, www.forayasinforgiveness.com. And forays is Forays. in forgiveness.com, and I'll put that in the chat room. And but I know a lot of you, you're familiar with it, but you might want to check that out because she posts some really interesting things over there. And I would also encourage you to continue to check out the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, www.facim.org. And also remember, you can find me for readings and personal consultations over on 12listen.com. And I hope that you'll stick around because there's more live programming here on 12 Radio. Up next is Kathleen Peterson and Friends. So until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. Stay informed, stay safe, and spread hope. You have been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and my guest, Susan Dugan, on 12 Radio, where we are changing the way we think about life and spirituality. Call it Sanctuary. 8 hours Monday through Friday when we significantly drop our prices on 12listen.com. There's a 4-hour block in the morning, 5 to 9 Pacific time, and again in the evening from 5 to 9. We know this is a difficult and challenging time for everyone, and when you want to reach out for support, advice, or guidance, or maybe a message from your guide or angel, or a suggestion for how to approach something in your life, it's nice to catch a break. Of course, advisors on 12listen.com are available 24/7, but you'll find many of us available during these sanctuary hours. Please feel free to reach out to me or any of us through the message system on 12listen.com and request a scheduled call at a time that's good for you. And we continue to offer a variety of time-based sessions that you can purchase anytime and then use when it's convenient for you. This is C.A. Brooks reminding you about Sanctuary. Reduce prices on 12listen.com Monday through Friday, 5 to 9 a.m. and 5 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. In the meantime, stay informed, stay safe, and spread hope. It's contagious.
Hi, this is Kay Dragon from 12listen and 12 Academy. I would like to invite you to join me once a month for my Merlin meditation and channeling sessions on 12 Academy. Each session includes a channeled meditation, and everyone in the class gets a personally channeled message. Please check out the schedule on 12academy.com.
Hello, my name is Caroline. I'm an angel intuitive and a health intuitive. And I've been working with people to help them release the issues that are making them ill since 2005. I find that often people are unaware of why they are ill. Since I've been working on 12listen, I've had clients call and ask me about their health issues, which of course I'm happy to help them with. But if you're interested in removing these blocks, then you're welcome to look at my email-based healing sessions, and this is where the real changes can be made. I'm not a doctor, nor am I qualified to diagnose or discuss your medicines, but I can help to alleviate some of the symptoms by helping your body to recalibrate or realign and work out for itself how to heal. I can work on individuals, on families, on groups of people, on businesses, and on animals. If you're wondering why you are not feeling 100% or you're stuck in a pattern and do not seem to be able to move forward, can I suggest that you take a look at what I'm offering and let's find a way to help you move forward together. Look for Caroline N on 12listen.com and I very much look forward to working with you and helping you to move forward.
Fur baby, animal companion, pet, best friend, little no matter what you call them, you can't imagine life without them. This is Katie Weaver, and I'm an animal communicator over at 12listen.com. Give me a call whenever you're... need a little extra help.